Welcome in to the Buggy Coverage Podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, and Fort Worth is a winter, I don't know if wonderland is the right word, but it's certainly
maybe not. Wintry.
It's certainly wintry here. We got probably, 3-4 inches of snow the other night, and there's more on the way. So we are snowed in, classes canceled. Thankfully, both of us still have power and internet, and we can still deliver some good content for you on this snowy afternoon in Fort Worth. Jack,
exactly.
How are you doing today? We got All-Stars, we got college basketball recap, got a little bit of news before that. How are you spending the snow day? How's morale over on the other side of campus?
It's been pretty good, actually. My friends and I here, we were able to get up pretty early. We actually didn't really go to bed for a while the first night that it snowed, so we were up at 3 or 4 in the morning when it first started coming down. So we can say we did that, but not too much over the last couple of days. Again, no power issues for us, thankfully. Our hearts are out with people that are really struggling with that, because we know it's been really tough for a lot of people, especially over near the south side of campus. I have some friends there that have lost a lot of their power. So I'm hoping everyone can be staying warm and staying fed during this time. I saw Kroger also lost power too yesterday. Half the store was shut down, so it was pretty crazy. But I'm very glad that I went ahead and got a lot of food at Target a few days before all this happened. I kind of was thinking it could be bad, so I went ahead and stocked up, and I'm starting to get a little thin, but we can make it, because it looks like this weekend is going to be very nice weather, and next week it's going to be gorgeous, up in the high 60s, almost in the 70s by the end of next week. So it's going to be fantastic next week, but we just got to make it through all of this. Love the snow, but you know, when we really think about it, everyone's worried about being stuck at home for a while. And I'm like, haven't we been doing that for the last year? So kind of interesting that we're all kind of used to the sitting at home quarantine. Now it's just back to more of a normal reason why we would be sitting at home versus the once a century pandemic.
Yeah, I love the snow. I love the cold. Bring it on. Give me all the snow.
And now we can sort of get right into our first part of the podcast. We're going to the other sports roundup, and we're going to be changing up a little bit from now on in the other sports roundup, because now we don't have any consistent content for NFL and college football. So we're going to be putting in a little football segment into the other sports roundup, just to give you all any sort of news we get around the league here. Before we start off with this, I did want to say, I don't know if you watched much of it, but Johnny Football looks like he's come back a little bit. It was the fan-controlled league. We mentioned it a few podcasts ago, and it was kind of fun. I didn't really watch a lot of it, but I saw that two-point conversions are the only way for an extra point, and it's one-on-one matchups. I mean, it's like this great – you have a rock, paper, scissors is the coin toss.
Yeah, it's like a 7-on-7, right?
Yeah, and the fans call the play. So before every single play, the fans decide online what play they're running. And then they just got to run the play. Like, it's really neat. So I think it's a pretty cool thing how they're doing this. And I'll make sure to tune in a little more. I didn't really tune in last week, but I'll make sure to get more on that and see who we're going for. I know we said we were going to pick a team for it, but I don't know if I can roll with Johnny Manziel. So I think it's too cliche. I got to pick a more underdog team, but
yeah,
we'll keep going on that once it continues. Looking around the rest of the league, the Houston Texans have been leading the news for all the NFL stuff, and it's been interesting. Houston Texans president Jamie Roots retires, or resigns, technically. And then J.J. Watt, the longtime Texan, I think 11 seasons now, is freed. The man is freed. He has now been released by the Texans, which is, God, is that so sad that they couldn't even get anything out of him. They couldn't even trade him. They just had to drop him, which is just so sad.
Verbal meme, Deshaun Watson is now Will Smith standing in the empty room.
Yep, that's pretty accurate. Yeah, seeing that, he's wondering when he can leave, because right now it looks like the Houston Texans seem not interested in trading him, which is interesting considering he's not going to do much. As a fantasy owner of Deshaun, please, dear God, trade him. I really would like to win my year next season, and I will not if he's still on the Texans. So we'll see if that ends up happening. Pro Day, of course, was canceled for everyone on a nationwide basis, at least, but a lot of individual players still held their own, including what is expected to be the number one pick, Trevor Lawrence. The Clemson quarterback hosted a private pro day and impressed many, including a 60-yard bomb, 60 yards through the air, too. I mean, he was playing very, very well in his little mini pro day. I know it really is almost irrelevant at this point, considering the Jaguars are going to take him at number one. I can't imagine why he wouldn't. But still, nice to see him getting some throws in sort of after the debacle that was the playoffs for him, and very interested to see how he's going to perform with that Urban Meyer-led team. Chris Hogan, a name that I actually remember pretty well, a former Super Bowl champion wide receiver for the Patriots, has entered the Premier Lacrosse League draft. So he's a 33 years old, but it looks like we're getting an NFL player going to play some lacrosse professionally. So,
well, he was a lacrosse player in college originally before he was a wide receiver in the NFL. So now going back to his original sport, I bold prediction here. I think he dominates.
I mean, I'd love to see it. That might actually have me watch a little bit, even though I'm no fan of the Patriots or not particularly a big Chris Hogan fan. But I mean, it's kind of cool to see someone I actually know about, because of course my lacrosse knowledge is not particularly high. So interested to see that a little bit. Next up, Gus Malzahn, the former longtime head coach of the Auburn Tigers, has been hired as the new UCF head coach. So interesting development here. UCF already saying they have the best head coach in Florida now, which, I mean, isn't really saying much, but interesting turnaround here. Do you think that he can get this UCF team back to be a big time contender? Because they were pretty decent last year. UCF was not bad last year. Not really great, but still had a winning season and looked pretty competent despite all of COVID.
Maybe. I'm really not sure, because I'm not sure how Gus Malzahn is going to operate outside of Auburn, because we've seen him there for so long. So how much of his success was, you know, attributed to being able to get the recruits that Auburn is able to get and recruit the way they are, and being so close and so both in proximity and in rivalry with Alabama and playing in the SEC West, you know, how much of that was attributed to Gus Malzahn's success versus actually being a good X's and O's coach and being able to win with lesser talent in a lesser conference. I'm really interested to see how he does. I'm not super optimistic though. His offense was, it was pretty dink and dunk. It's pretty outdated. Hasn't evolved very much since the Cam Newton, Nick Marshall days, when the spread offense was really taking off. Everyone's running the spread offense now. They are not, or Gus Malzahn is not necessarily doing anything super impressive or revolutionary right now. So I'm not super optimistic, but at the same time, I think there's certain potential there.
Very interested to see them go 8-4 once again, pull a classic Auburn record. Next up with the Panthers, this news out of today, looking to release longtime defensive tackle Kawan Short, basically one of the very, very few last members of the 2015 Super Bowl attending team. The 15-1 Panthers, still the greatest team in the regular season record since the 16-0 Patriots. But yeah, kind of surprising here a little bit that they're sort of getting rid of this whole thing. Not extremely considering his age, but a little bit sad for Panthers thing, just to sort of see this 2015 team already be basically gone only a few years later. I mean, really, the running back retired. Cam Newton's been gone. Most of the defense is out of here. It's been a big change for Panthers fans and for this organization. And I'm interested to see, at least as a divisional rival. I know rival's a strong term, considering I really don't care that much about the Panthers really one way or the other, but I am interested to see how they respond and rebuild on this defense that needs obviously a lot of help, but they'll have another high draft pick, so they'll be looking once again.
Well, you know, that Super Bowl team was only 1 year before Atlanta's Super Bowl team.
Which was weird, considering that the year after that, I'm pretty sure, was when the Rams beat the Saints on that very badly miscalled play in the NFC Championship. So we almost had.
No, I'm pretty sure the next year was the Eagles.
Then it was the year after that. Okay.
And the next year was the Pats. Then the next year was the Chiefs.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about when the Rams beat. It was, yeah, because that was Super Bowl in Atlanta when it was Rams Patriots. That's right. So, yeah, in a 4 year period, we almost had three of those teams. So, and even if you want to take since since that Panthers Super Bowl appearance that every team except the Saints and every team has appeared in the NFC Championship and almost every team. So kind of a wild run for NFC South teams. You also had a lot of years in a row where it was switching around. I know the Saints have been winning it a bunch of years in a row now, but right before the Saints run, it was every single team almost got a turn. So the South is always a weird spot. And our final news also in the NFC South and a tragic one, a former LA Charger, San Diego Charger at the time, and Tampa Bay wide receiver Vincent Jackson was found dead at 36 years old in a motel. So very sad news there. Very tragic, especially that young, had played a long time. I know with the Buccaneers last season he played was 2016, I want to say. So sad news to hear that from the NFL world for a player that was loved by many, especially those down in Tampa Bay, who, of course, has won the Super Bowl. So unfortunate to hear that news. Moving on to some soccer news, there's not a lot here, but we are getting ready for MLS to start. Normally, they would be starting in about a couple of weeks. Instead, they're starting on April 17th, so it's going to be a little bit further back, but they will be kicking off in not too long. And in the biggest news of actually with really anything concerning clubs, the FIFA Club World Cup occurred, the finals. It was Bayern Munich against Tigres, and it was a 1-0 victory for Bayern, which now means that Bayern is only the second team to have won 6 titles in one season, winning the Bundesliga, Champions League, the Club World Cup final, I think another Continental German Cup, and a few, I don't remember all of them, but they won 6 total titles. The last team to do that was Barcelona in, I want to say, early 2000s. I don't know the exact date, but they did win, I think, or was it 09 maybe? One of those years, it was in the 2000s, and that was the last team to do that. So a lot of debate between who would win that matchup if those two historical teams played. But yeah, much credit to Bayern for having pretty obviously their greatest season ever as a club in their many, many years of existing. And some other historic sports news is getting changed around. Major League Baseball with some big, big news. We knew this was coming, but here is the full plan. Anyway, the minor leagues are having their biggest change in perhaps the history of the minor leagues. And it's getting shifted way down. We talked about this a lot. There are a lot of teams that are going to get dissolved. A lot of teams changed, and that's going to happen. So now it is called AAA, AA, High A, and Low A are your minor league teams in baseball. They each have their own geographic distinction. Names are not actually final for the divisions and tiers, so it may change from a AA, AAA, whatever. The New York Penn League, which was founded in 1939, has been dissolved. The Pioneer League is dissolved, and the Appalachian League is actually dropped and being used independently for college development, like a summer league for players in between semesters in college. They're also, if you add in every single team across all the divisions and leagues, the entire baseball system will now have 209 teams in 19 leagues in 44 states and 4 provinces. So that's the extent of baseball. It's huge right now. A lot of teams are flipping around. I saw there were some minor league teams that I actually do pretty well that are changing. I know the Braves at least will still have the Gwinnett Stripers, Mississippi Braves. So they're, I know at least for my team, they'll be staying the same. But I know the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, which I've been to some games down there with a lot of my family. They've flipped around a lot. I think they were Reds, and then I think they're now Marlins. So there are a few that have switched around down there. A few went away, of course. But I'm interested to see how that pans out. I know baseball is such an obscenely massive system. I know we talk about like the NFL doesn't really have one. The NBA has a G League, but MLB is a whole different monster of having this entire system. So it is getting slimmed down. Unfortunate for the teams that have been cut. We hate to see that for them. But I mean, with COVID restrictions and COVID budgetary cuts, I mean, it's sort of was inevitable. Next up in our last sort of other news, we have everything down here. Tennis is basically dominating this one. The Australian Open is on. It's the third round of 32 matchups. Djokovic, Nadal, and Thiem are all still alive as the top three seeds. Djokovic actually won today in his matchup and got quite angry, busted his tennis racket, as well as damaged the court, actually, in an outburst, but still was able to pull out the win. So tennis players and their emotions, we know, is big. Also, Serena Williams and Osaka will face off in the semifinals of the Australian Open for the women's, which will be a must-watch matchup. I can't wait to see that. And then lastly, Valparaiso, the team that we'll talk about later in their matchups with Drake in college basketball, were one of the last few teams to have the Crusader mascot and logo, and they are retiring that. They're going to switch it up. They actually weren't originally Crusaders. They changed that name back in the mid-1900s. After I'm not sure what they used to be, but I know they weren't that originally. And the Crusader mascot is what you're thinking. So it was referring to the Crusades between the Christians and the Muslims throughout the 1100s, 1200s. And pretty obviously that contains a lot of negative connotations in modern day. And so they're trying to move away from that. The school is very, very heavily Christian, and they're looking to switch up to another type of mascot and logo. Colors and everything else are remaining the same, but interesting to see another change up that was not quite big. I know we usually see these with Native American imagery, not usually a more religious one, but nevertheless, a change up for Valparaiso. Now we can move on to our NBA recap. We'll be getting in our stories here, as well as some odds starting up for conference finals and play-in round, as well as our All-Star Player of the Week, all sorts of fun stuff. So how about the Utah Jazz? We'll start it off with that.
You like jazz?
You like jazz?
You like jazz? As Jerry Seinfeld once famously said in the Oscar snubbed B movie.
Greatest movie ever made.
Should have won movie of the year. Whenever that movie was
picture
made.
Right here.
Yeah. The Jazz are currently ripping through the Western Conference. Let me take you through some of the stats. I believe what they're 18-1 in their last 19. They just came off of a win against the 76ers, albeit without Embiid last night, but this is ridiculous. The last time they lost a game, they were 4-4. Oh, I'm sorry. Not the last time they lost a game. They lost one game in the past like month or so against the Nuggets. But the last time they lost a game before that was against the Knicks. They were 4-4. 8 games into the season. The date for that game, January the 6th.
Good Lord.
They have lost one game in over a month and 10 days. That's ridiculous.
It's like the 2015 Hawks, 17-0 in January, basically playing at that level.
That's ridiculous. So what are they doing better this year than they were doing last year? So the Utah Jazz have the best record in the league right now at 23-5. They're shooting a higher percentage from three while attempting about 5 more threes a game. They're attempting 42 threes a game. That's a lot. That's a big number. They're not quite attempting as many free throws. They're shooting just the same from the line. They're getting more offensive rebounds. They're getting 2 more offensive rebounds a game, which I think is really helping them, especially in these close games. When you can just steal possessions like that, when you can get extra possessions and get second chance points, that's really giving you an advantage over your opponents. And then the assists are up. They're assisting about 1.5 more assists per game. Tells me they're moving the ball a little bit more. And Mike Conley has been the biggest difference. And I know you want to talk about him later, so I'll let you talk about him a little bit more in a minute. But Mike Conley is playing outstanding, leading the team in assists. And of course, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are both playing like all-stars once again. So this is a real, I think, contender for the conference finals. And I didn't believe it until I saw them play with Mike Conley, the improved and healthy Mike Conley that I saw in Memphis. Mm-hmm. And he's really settling into his role. And I think this team can be really, really, really good in the playoffs.
And a note about this Jazz team, too, that I found interesting is that all of my takes about the Jazz last season are all coming true now, because I was really, really high on this team pre-last season. And then part of it, of course, cut due to COVID and all the craziness of it. But I really, really believed in this team, and it sort of got cut short. And now with this team healthy, ready to go, they're really flourishing. So I was about a year late with that, but I'm really happy this team is finally starting to come to fruition here. Looking around the rest of the league, the NBA All-Star game, of course, we'll get to the All-Star selections later, but the game is still happening. It's actually going to my hometown of Atlanta, booked for March 7th. Players are not really loving the idea. I know Fox, LeBron, and Giannis, to point out a few, have spoke out actually against it pretty blatantly. Jokic actually did not. They asked him about it, and he was like, I don't really care. Also, Kevin Durant kind of said the same thing. He was like, play it or not, I don't really care. So interesting to see some players having their thoughts on that. Again, I enjoy it just because it's happening, but I mean, is it really necessary? No. I mean, it probably is an extra risk considering that all these players have to come all the way to Atlanta and then all leave and all have the special transport. I mean,
yeah,
it seems like a lot of time, energy, effort, and money to be able to pull this off.
Right, and here's the thing. All-Star Weekend is for the fans in the first place. It's cool for the players to be able to experience, you know, being on an All-Star team and get the honor of being on an All-Star team and get the whole experience, all the swag, you know, get to sit half or courtside at all the three-point contests and everything. I get that it's definitely fun for the players, but it's definitely more for the fans in its core role. So I don't think there should be an All-Star game this year. If you're not going to be able to have fans and have the whole fan experience, why would you even do it? The NFL put their Pro Bowl online for the same reason.
Well, and you can see what they're doing with the schedule of the game. They put the skills contest and the three-point contest before the game. First half the game is played, then they do the dunk contest, then they play the second half. And I'm like, the dunk contest is so much fun because the crowd can react and you can have a fun time with it. And like last year, we had the controversy of the whole D-Wade and like Aaron Gordon getting robbed once again. And like, but it was the fun.
Are we going to see Zion doing, windmills in an empty gym? Like what's... Like it's
weird. It's weird. Like I love the dunk contest so much, but it's fun because you get the interaction with it. It's like I can bear having games like this without fans and watching them, and that's okay because first of all, I'm just starved enough for sports that I'm happy we even get to play this at all. And also, if you're in the moment of the game, there's enough crowds. I mean, it's fine enough to do that. But if you're playing a skill competition like a dunk contest or three-point contest, the whole point of it is getting everyone riled up in it. If there's no one to get all excited, I don't know what you're going to do. So I'm interested to see how they handle this. It looks like as of now, everything's still good to go. I know we're still 3 or 4 weeks away from that actually happening. I think, about 3 weeks-ish, 2.5 until it occurs. But I'm interested to see how that turns out. Next up, Fred VanVleet for the Raptors. This team has been mostly terrible this season, but he had an excellent note. 54 points dropped, most in Raptors history, and actually the most by an undrafted player, beat out Malone's 53. So good for you, Fred VanVleet, Wichita State player who I've always really liked him. So I'm very glad to see that he was able to break a long-time record. Kevin Durant was pulled about a week ago. This was a really weird game. He was pulled due to health and safety protocols for COVID, despite already playing in the game. They ruled him out and they said, well, you can come back in. And they said, wait, you need to leave again. And it was like, well, you already played the game partially. So why take him back out again? It was just such a weird thing. The Nets lost to the Raptors actually in that game. Brooklyn was 14-10 at the time. So it's just such a bizarre moment. I really didn't understand that.
And this is sports during COVID, right? I mean, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have weird things. We're going to have weird guidelines. We've been seeing it for months. And my real question is, if Kevin Durant is quote unquote like high exposure or whatever reason he got pulled from the court, whether it was a positive test or high exposure, would all the players on the court not also be high exposure that have been playing against it? Like
Where it got kind of silly.
And confusing. And here's the thing, and I'm not advocating one way or the other on this. It's just the fact of the matter that it's not really about protecting the players or protecting health and safety. I think it's more about appearing like you care about health and safety, even though there's certainly some double standards and some things that don't entirely make a whole lot of sense.
Next up, we're going to go right into Derrick Rose. We have loved seeing this. Derrick Rose goes back to the Knicks. Dennis Smith Jr. in draft compensation brought back over the Pistons. So very excited to see Derrick Rose kind of get a second shot. He's been decent so far. I know he's actually in the top 10 leading with the all-star voting for the guard position. So interesting to see Derrick Rose sort of getting back into form a little bit. I know it's still D Rose and he's getting older. So it's not like he's going to go for any other MVP repeat, but it still is interesting to see him getting some more playing time with his old team.
Rejoins his old coach, Tom Thibodeau, as well.
Mm-hmm. Danilo Gallinari, who has not done a ton this season, but he does become the first Italian-born NBA player to reach 10,000 points. So congratulations to one of my Hawks. Hawks end up losing in that game, too, because that's what we do best. We'll get on to talking about them in a minute. And the Raptors will officially finish the season in Tampa Bay, which I was laughing seeing this as like, well, maybe they can get a title too, considering that the Lightning have won, the Bucks have won. I mean, so far Tampa Bay is title town, so maybe the Raptors not make the playoffs now. So even though they've had a terrible start, they have played a little bit better since then, to give them credit, so that they have one a little more, still get around there. And then lastly, a few weeks ago, or about a week ago, LeBron and Kyle Kuzma were warned by the NBA for violating the anti-flopping rule, which that was hilarious. If you see the play again, which they got penalized for, it's pretty clear they were flopping, which I thought was very, very humorous to see LeBron finally get called out for that. But yeah, that was quite interesting. Next up, we have some odds here, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of these odds and what we're thinking. This is from ESPN. Now, it's a couple days ago, so it may have changed some, but it's a couple days ago. Odds to make the conference finals. In the West, you have the Lakers leading it with 70, about 70%. I'm going to round up for these. So 71%. Utah, 51. Clippers, 35. Nuggets, 12. Then in the East, Milwaukee, 72. Brooklyn, 37. It's a huge drop there. Philly, 27, and then Toronto at 24. What do you think of those odds there to make the conference finals?
Well, obviously the East, if you go look at the standings, is a massive cluster, you know what. I don't really see how you can definitively say that Milwaukee has a 71% chance to make the conference finals, given what we've seen in the playoffs the last year, couple years. Especially as jumbled and messy as the East is this year. And with Brooklyn and Philly looking like real contenders, potentially, Toronto sitting up at 24% is kind of shocking to me. But obviously we've seen this team put it together in the playoffs before. So there's really no reason other than the fact that they started off a little slow in the regular season to doubt them on that now.
I think that's very fair as well. Next up, we're going to go into the play-in. So odds to make the play-in tournament, which is the, what is it again? I think it's 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9. So doing that for the last two spots of the play-in. So those are in the West, Portland, 58% leading. So that's showing how thin those margins are. That's the highest odds. Pelicans, 57, Dallas, 56, and Spurs, 47. In the East, Atlanta, 80%, Hornets, 77, Pacers, 74, and then Chicago with a big drop off at 44.
Chicago, 44% to make the play-in. I know we just mentioned how much of a cluster the East was. Atlanta to make the play-in, I actually like their chances. If they can sort of pull it together like they were at the beginning of the season and get healthy, I actually like their chances to make it a little bit higher than the play-in, maybe escape having to play for their fate there.
If we're healthy, absolutely. Yeah, we've been extremely, extremely, extremely banged up. Ever since we lost DeAndre Hunter, we've gone 1-7, and he was playing fantastic, the 23-year-old going off. But
I also think Indiana is going to slide up there. I know they're without Caris LeVert. They got rid of Oladipo, but I still think this team is capable of winning a lot more games. So I think Atlanta and Indiana are they're obviously the most likely candidates out of this, not statistically, but in my mind, Indiana is more likely than Charlotte. They're the most likely candidates to make the play-in tournament because they're the most likely candidates, in my mind, to surpass the play-in tournament. Now, we should talk about some teams that could slide back into the play-in tournament. That could be interesting as well.
Indeed. So now we can move on to our all-star selections. And you can go ahead and go first, Noah. I know we have a lot of similar players, a few different ones, overall pretty consensus on a few names. But how we're going to do this, at least I sort of went off of what you did here, which is taking the top 10 selections out of that top 10 in no particular order. I did have 5 guys in the East, 5 guys in the West. And then I filled out the rest of it below. I think I did 24, 25, roughly that amount. I'm guessing it's about the same. So we can go ahead and you can start us off.
Yeah. So what I did in kind of designing this, it's 24 players overall. I didn't necessarily group them by conference because they're not doing that for the All-Star selection anymore. It's the captains picking teams. It's weird. I like having East versus West. I think that's fun and interesting. But yeah, obviously they can get a little bit more content out of the captains, quote unquote, picking the teams. So I went through and I ranked I ranked my top 10 players. After that, it was a little bit sketchy. And even at the end of the top 10, it was getting a little bit hard to, okay, and now I got to pick between, you know, one of these guys. So how we did it, we had guard slash forward, a forward, and then a forward or a center. As far as the lineups. And so we're going to have a starting five, and then everyone else is just kind of like tiered off after that. So for my starting five, I had LeBron at the three, but he was my number one overall player. Embiid at the two, because I think he's a legitimate MVP candidate. Now, this is where it got interesting, because I had Jokic as my third ranked player. But you can't really have two centers, especially two slow seven-footers in the lineup at the same time. So while Jokic would, I guess, technically be a starter, I did not have him as such because I had Embiid ranked slightly ahead of him. Then I had, rounding out the lineup, Curry at point guard, Beal at shooting guard, because Beal is shooting the lights out right now. I mean, I don't think, and I'll get into this later when I'm putting together this sort of formula, I take winning into account a fair amount. I think the most successful guys on this list often have the best teams. Bradley Beal is kind of the one exception to where he's doing such ridiculous things on the offensive end of the floor right now that even though his team is not winning, I'm going to put him ahead of some of those guys whose teams are having a little bit more success just because he's doing such outrageous things on the basketball court right now. So I had Beal rounding out the lineup and Durant. So my starting five, Curry, Beal, LeBron, Durant, and Embiid. Running down the second list, or the second tier, I guess, I had Lillard, Harden, Giannis, Kawhi, and then Jokic sitting there at that second center spot. And this is where it got interesting for me, because I was actually going to put Luka in my top 10. But again, the winning thing. And you may say, well, how could you put Harden, who had that big debacle at the beginning of the season and went through trade and everything else? You may say, how can you put him as your seventh overall ranked player? And I would say to you, he is leading the league in assists and his team is winning. And that both of those things are very important. I think league leaders are also important, as long as they're not empty stats, because in the back of my list, I also had Capella making it as sort of my last player in. And then running down the rest of the list, Luka, Mitchell, Levine, Sabonis, Anthony Davis, Trae Young, Jaylen Brown, Zach LaVine, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, De'Aaron Fox, Jaylen Brown, Devin Booker, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum, Julius Randle, who I already said, and then Andre Drummond, along with Clint Capella. So any questions that you have for me about my list? I would love to field all the questions.
I agree with you on Booker with this one, but I was noticing, because I was pretty focused on PER with this, and I did agree with him here because I wanted to fill it in a little bit, but his efficiency has not been very good this season.
No, it hasn't. And that's why he was part of my, I guess you'd call it the last four in, kind of like March Madness. Because yeah,
I still had him in though. I'm not totally disagreeing.
I sort of filled it out with my top 20 and I kind of broke it down by position so that we didn't have just like a total abundance of centers all over the court or whatever. So
it's
I more
a
or less
year for big men.
Yeah, it's been an incredible great year. I have so many big men listed on this list.
Yes.
Specifically in the Western Conference. But yeah, Booker was part of the last four because I got to 20 with sort of the four tiers of five. And then I got to 20 and I was like, I'm just going to go through and kind of look and see who I think probably deserves to make it. And Phoenix is winning right now. So I think Phoenix deserves, I think Booker deserved to make it, because you got to put someone from that team, and Chris Paul's not it.
Yeah. So to move on to my top players, I actually had the same four as you, just in a different order. Number one, got to go with the King, LeBron James, still sticking with that as my first overall, also starting at the three. At the four position, I went with Kevin Durant. I have him up at two. I think he's been playing like it. I think also the fact that he's still coming off that injury and playing in the way that he is still deserving of that. The fans tend to agree, as LeBron just actually took over Kevin for the number one spot. At three, I had Jokic. I still have him a little bit above Embiid at four. So I'm I am still high on Embiid because he's playing well, but I'm a little bit higher on Jokic for how he's been doing. So I'm have him at three, Embiid at four. My five is Steph Curry. I have him just one slot ahead of where you have him, just because I think he's been playing at an MVP level recently. And yeah, some of these guys are a little bit off recency bias how they're playing, but still, I really love what Steph has been able to do. And then right behind him, at six, I'm actually going to go with Damian Lillard. I've really loved how he's been going this season. I have him a little bit higher than where you're putting him. He's right now sixth in most efficient players. He's shooting at almost 30 points a game at about 45%. Not shooting as well from three as he typically does, but still having a fantastic season. At the seventh position, I put Beal. Can't have him much too behind them. Only penalized him a little bit more due to winning because these wishwash wizards are so god-awful. I know that he's the only reason why they basically won anything, and they're doing a little bit better in the last few games. They've won four of their last nine, which I know is not great, but that is better. So I will give them that. The Wizards are improving somewhat. Then moving on to number eight, I have Jaylen Brown. He's been playing out of his mind this season, probably his best season of his career so far, so I wanted to shout him out. At number nine, I went with Giannis. I know we both have not talked a lot about Giannis this season. I mean, he's at eight for you, nine for me. I mean, not doing a ton, but he still is the third most efficient player in the league right now and still playing very well. It just hasn't been as big as we sort of expected. And then at number 10, I'm agreeing with you on having Kawhi Leonard there having a great season. Looking to round out the rest of my list, at the one position, I also went with Luka and Trae Young, my Atlanta boy, even though I got to put him below Luka, and I'm still not super sold on him being above Fox. I think De'Aaron Fox is honestly playing a little bit better than Trae right now, so I might have him above him. He's been weird this season. The floater has been weirdly missing. He's not driving nearly as much, and a lot of these, it's just, he's been playing very strange. I'm not entirely
sure. The scoring's been off.
I think coaching's a lot to do with
it. I'm wondering if, because his usage rate is so high, now teams are afraid of Trae shooting and they're really crashing on him. And so that's really going to end up being the rest of the team. And they're going to have to shoot a higher clip from 3-point land. That's just the fact of the matter. They can only do so much in the paint with Capella and Collins. They're going to have to shoot threes, and Trae can't be the only one that's knocking down from out there.
True. At the two position, I agree with you having Donovan Mitchell right up there as well. He's been playing fantastic this season, leading the Jazz to a league best 22-5. I also put Shea in there. I know we haven't talked a lot about OKC this season, and rightfully so. They haven't really done much, but Shea's been playing pretty well, actually just below Trae Young in efficiency rating. He is scoring 23 points a game and playing really, really well. Also has, I think, what is it? Three double-doubles on the season. Has been playing very, very efficiently also from the three-point line, scoring about 38%, which is actually doing better than Trae. So, yeah, Gilgeous Alexander playing very good this season, and then agreeing with you putting in Booker at the end. At the three spot, I have James Harden as well. Not having him as high as you have him, but I still put James in there just because I don't think he's been as big of a superstar as he normally is. And then Zach LaVine as well from Chicago. He's been doing great this season, leading Chicago to what few wins they do get. At the four spot, I'm going to go out a little bit of a limb with some of these guys here. Zion Williamson. No one talks about Zion anymore. And I know that he was the poster child of ESPN last season, and they have moved on very quickly to talking about LaMelo Ball at endless, endless degree. But Zion has had a really good season, and people aren't really talking about it. I mean, looking at his stats so far this year, if I can get to him, let me get to this. Zion Williamson is eighth right now in player efficiency. Eighth. He's one spot below Steph Curry and above Bradley Beal. He is above Bradley Beal, playing two more games. He's getting 24 points a game. He's shooting 61% from the field and even shooting 32% from the three-point line and 71% from the line. He's getting 7 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game, a steal, and a block. He's been pretty good. So I got to give Zion Williamson a shout out. I know it seems weird to think about Zion not being the center of attention as he has been most of last season, but he is playing out of his mind right now. And I think absolutely deserves an all-star spot.
But the team isn't winning. That's my thing. The team is not winning. And I know I had guys in here whose teams are also not winning, but Zion's team seems particularly disappointing because they seem like they should have the talent to do it, right?
They do, but to me, it's with an all-star voting, I see it as the all-star, not the all-team. And then at the end of the day, the team winning does matter, but I don't know how much I'm going to penalize Bradley Beal, a player like him, or a player like Zion, for it saying, if you put Zion on another team, and let's say his stats are exactly the same, no change at all, and the team's playing better, Zion should get a higher individual award? I don't really see that. And I get MVP is different because MVP most valuable, that's a different award. So to me, I don't see those the same. But All-Star, I think, is really just about who are the top players and how they are playing. And to me, I can't look at Zion's stats and say him being the 8th most efficient player, shooting out of his mind and playing incredibly well for a team that, yes, it is not a really great team. But I can't really hurt him that much for that because he's just playing too well.
And maybe the reason that I snubbed Zion was because we had such high expectations for him coming into the league that it doesn't feel like he's sort of at that headline level yet. And maybe that's just a lack of appreciation that we have for what Zion's doing at the moment. But
I mean, if you think about it, you put a few Celtics players in there. The Celtics are only 2 games above the Pelicans right now. 2. I mean, they're not that different. And so and I get that you could argue the Celtics are still looking better, but they've had not a great – I mean, they're 13-13. They're not really doing great. I mean, the Pelicans are only 4 games behind the Nuggets. Only 4 games behind the Nuggets. So, like, I get they're not playing super great. I get I'm not trying to say that the Pelicans are going to be a playoff-caliber team as of right now. But they're only 4 games behind the Nuggets who are having an MVP caliber Nikola Jokic right now. So, like, I don't see a massive difference. Next up, again, on that same vein, Vucevic. I get this team is not particularly great. We're talking about, in this situation, the Orlando Magic, who are not very good. But he's the 11th most efficient player right now. He's putting up 24 points per game. He's shooting 48% from the field and 43% from three. He has an 82% free throw percentage. He's getting 11 rebounds a game, averaging a double-double, and getting 4 assists a game. I think he's playing great. I think he's the only reason why the Magic are good right now, and I got to give him credit here. So just same kind of vein as the last pick. Rounding it out, I also have Sabonis agreeing with you there. And then finally at the 5 spot, Gobert playing like Defensive Player of the Year, Clint Capela leading the league in rebounds, and then Anthony Davis playing fantastically as well. Moving on to our Role Player of the Week, I'm still going with Mike Conley here. He's got the 9th highest defensive rating, 27th highest offensive rating, which goes to still 9th overall, which is the highest on Utah. Him being healthy and ready to go is a huge reason why this team's going off.
And I was inspired by your defensive rating spotlight. My Role Player of the Week is going to be Kyle Kuzma, who's posting, and I'm not making this up, he's posting a top 10 defensive rating, top 15 defensive rating, just outside of top 10. Top 15 defensive rating this season while also rebounding the heck out of the basketball. His rebounding percentage has jumped exponentially, I believe, from around 10% to 18%. His rebounding numbers have jumped. His scoring has dropped a little bit, but I think they're asking him to do less of that. And he's really stepping into being a role player in the NBA. I know everyone was kind of excited about Kuzma. Kuzma probably got wrapped up in his own hype a little bit through his first 3 or so NBA seasons. He was getting buckets, he was getting touches, he was scoring, but his team wasn't winning. The team is winning a lot this season, and there's a reason they only have 7 losses, and part of it's because Kyle Kuzma is playing a big role with that second unit there coming off the bench. So Kyle Kuzma for Role Player of the Week.
And finally, we have our stonks, stock up, stock down, buying and selling. Who are we looking at? And for me, pretty clear choice. I know it's not very creative with this one, but I'm still going to stick with the Utah Jazz. 18-1, over their last 19 games. There is no one better in the league right now in terms of how these teams are playing. Now, of course, will they be like my Hawks team a few years ago and then proceed to go to the conference finals and get swept? Or will they actually find some playoff hope here and make a big run? I would love to see it, because I always love when sort of your more random, quote unquote, I know that's not really fair, but like not the biggest name of teams make some big playoff runs are always more entertaining than the classic ones. So I would love to see it. They're playing pretty great right now and selling. I know the Celtics are still in the running for this, but I'm still going to stick with the Cavaliers. They've been looking pretty terrible lately and not really doing much. I get Colin Sexton has been playing really well for this team, but it's still not enough.
Well, I'm going with the Phoenix Suns as my stock up team. I am buying this team. I think they're starting to put it together a little bit. And Chris Paul is starting to take a step back as far as scoring is concerned, and really, really step into that leadership point guard passing role, and stepping back and letting other guys shoot the ball a little bit more. The Suns have won 6 straight. They're 9-1 over their last 10. And I am buying this team because their point differential is also pretty impressive. They're top 10 in the league there as well. I'm selling the Sacramento Kings. I'm done with them. I was so high on this team. You know, you keep thinking if Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox, you know, they got Marvin Bagley, when they can sort of put it all together, you got some nice role-playing pieces. They could be really dangerous. Well, they haven't put it together, and I don't think this lineup is going to put it together. So this is a team that I look as a prime trade candidate to maybe move one of those bigger pieces to try to get some fresh blood in there, change some things up. It's not working in its current manifestation, if you will.
If I can also add, I would also gladly put the Hawks on my selling team right now. I get that they're getting totally screwed by injury. I get they're getting screwed by injury, which I will say is a legitimate excuse. I don't care. That is legitimate. I mean, you don't have Bogey in. You don't have DeAndre Hunter in. You basically, your entire bench is gone except for Solomon Hill. So, I mean, it's pretty much a disaster right now. The only positive I can take from it is Skylar Mays, our second round pick, has actually looked really good. He put up, I think, 22, 24, 3 points in our last loss. So he actually looking really good as a guy that really wasn't expected to barely play anything this season. So credit to him for at least delivering a pretty good performance. But yeah, this team is looking a little lost right now, which, considering that Capella and Collins and Trey are all pretty much healthy and ready to go, that's not good. And I know you need a bench. I know you need help, but this team is basically the same team from last year plus Capella, which, again, this team is not good, but we were god awful last season without Capella. So it is an improvement. We are definitely an improvement, but it's still not good enough. So we'll see how they do with players starting to come back. On to college basketball, looking at some of our top games here. We have a full week to go over, though there's not as many games as usual for a whole week, but we still got some pretty big ones here. Starting off all the way back on last Tuesday, February 9th, we had West Virginia and Texas Tech, the number 7 Red Raiders, falling to the visiting number 14 Mountaineers, 82-71. McClung was not enough. Texas Tech couldn't pull this off. And kind of a wild moment at the end where Chris Beard, the head coach of Tech, was trying to mimic a foul and fell down, like fell on the floor, like sprawling his legs and arms out, trying to like fake a foul. And the refs tossed him out of the game. So Beard with his theatrics cost him at the end. And Texas Tech with a pretty humbling loss. Hotty toddy, Ole Miss knocking off number 10 Missouri in a dominant 21-point home win. Rebels getting very, very close to securing themselves a bubble spot. They're looking to be a big team to start to race in. Ole Miss looking a little dangerous this season. Number 15, Iowa, starting to gain some more traction. Completes a sweep of number 25, Rutgers. Really big win there for the Hawkeyes, who I know have been struggling a lot this season, but they really needed to get a win there.
The Hawkeyes are one of the most confusing teams in the country, for sure.
They're very weird. And I get that the Big Ten is an incredibly up and down conference. We've covered that endlessly, how this conference makes zero sense and how everyone wins and everyone loses. But it's still very weird.
But they have to be a prime candidate to like lose first round to like a 15 seed, right?
Like, or they have to be. Or go to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Those are the two options.
It's one of the two. They will be upset early, or they will go really deep in the tournament, and there is no in between.
I just can't believe that I haven't made a bracket on ESPN in 2 years. Thinking about that, I haven't made one in 2 years. I cannot understand.
I'm itching.
I cannot understand how excited I am to make them and enter them in and probably lose, but still, I love it. Next up, another big upset. These two teams are really, really, really neck and neck. It's Purdue and Minnesota. They're basically both constantly either just unranked or just ranked. Minnesota gets the edge this time, beats number 24 Purdue by 3 points at home after losing at halftime. Really, really big win for Minnesota. Again, they're 13-7, 13-8. I mean, these teams are crazy close, but Purdue has a big lead in terms of Big Ten record, which is going to matter down the stretch. Also, USC continue to win. They're up to number 20, so watch out for the Trojans. Also, Minnesota here, 5-0 against top 25 teams at home. So note that on Selection Sunday when Minnesota will likely make the tournament. That's a big reason why if they do. Number 19, Creighton gets a huge win at home against number 5, Villanova. Their odds for the tournament skyrocket on that win. These games are all from Saturday the 13th. But yeah, that's a massive, massive win for a Creighton team that's been going back and forth. Missouri, we just talked about how they lost to Ole Miss. Well, they choked again, this time against unranked Arkansas, who Arkansas being 16-5 after that win definitely should be ranked. The Razorbacks are a pretty good team here.
But did we really believe that Missouri basketball was back? Did we really believe it?
No, they're not bad, but they're not a top 10 team. A top 10 team. And that's just a sad, sad game here, which again, this game was basically the same thing as the TCU game, except Arkansas actually finished. So note that too. Next up in news that always makes me happy, Georgia played Alabama in basketball. And just like football, Alabama continues to own this team, except they scored 115 points.
Georgia basketball is a joke.
They only had one good player, and it was Anthony Edwards, and they still sucked. They did nothing with them. They couldn't even get the NIT with Anthony Edwards.
Hey, don't forget Georgia legend Kentavious Caldwell Pope.
Oh, my God. I forgot that he went there. But Alabama with 115 points actually breaks an SEC record that is the most points ever scored against a conference opponent, which just warms my heart that it's against Georgia. It's so wonderful there. Bama scored 64 points in the second half. I mean, disgusting, disgusting game. The craziest thing is Alabama's leading scorer only scored 21 points and they dropped 115. So big team game for the Tide there. Notice that too. This team will beat you all around. Next up, another big 12 upset. Number 12, OU, which upset maybe not, but they beat West Virginia. These teams are, I mean, they're basically even in record. West Virginia has one more loss and one more win. 91-90 on the road. It's very difficult to win in Morgantown. So big credit to Oklahoma. Both these teams are basically tournament locks, but man, OU is hot right now. So
yeah, I was about to say, like this. I think they can beat anyone come tournament time. Anyone in the country. It's,
double overtime as well in that game too. So very, very tight. When only a 1 point win, Austin Reeves, who's back. And Austin Reeves is honestly, I think should be up, maybe not the winner, but he should be up there for Big 12 player of the year. Austin Reeves is so
I mean, good. Yeah, it's gotta be him. And who's the kid, Jared Butler from Baylor. And
oh yeah.
Not Marcus Garrett. He's not that good.
Oh Lord. No, not even close. No.
Yeah, I mean, who else is on that? Who else is on that list? Mac McClung? No.
He'll probably finish top five. No one on TCU.
It's going to be probably Jared Butler or.
Though I do think Mike Miles.
Brown. Brown from Texas.
That's true. Though I still wouldn't.
Mike Miles could win Big 12 Freshman of the Year. He has a legitimate case.
If it wasn't for Cade Cunningham, which they're going to put to win anyway, Cade Cunningham could sit the rest of the season and they would give him the award, let's be honest. But yeah. I think Mike, I mean, when they played each other, Mike still outplayed him. So I don't know. I mean, Mike, if he doesn't get at least a finalist for that award, then it's rigged. But I don't think he's going to win it. But I mean, if Cade wasn't playing this season, I think he would. But I think they're just going to give it to Cade because it's Cade. I know it's not football season, but go Tigers. LSU takes down number 16 Tennessee in a late bubble push. Sorry to hear that for the Vols, of course, but LSU, a team that is a legitimate contender, 13-6, and a common record we're seeing here. These kind of records for these good kind of bubble-ish teams. So yeah, pretty big win for that team there. And the infamous series between Loyola Chicago and Drake. We'll have a bunch of games here, but this one was rough. Number 22, Loyola Chicago destroys Drake. Outscored the Bulldogs 50-20 in the second half. Just ridiculous performance. 81-54 is your final. And the thing is, though, is that Drake didn't like that. So Drake came back and then immediately beat them. They played like the next day, and Drake won in a wild overtime win right after losing. I actually watched a lot of that game. So Drake ends up winning that game still. They're 20-2, 11-2 in the Missouri Valley. Loyola Chicago, 18-4, 13-2 in Missouri Valley, ranked at number 22, probably will fall a little bit. Also, number three, Michigan. No, it's not an upset, but they were able to beat number 21, Wisconsin. That's a big win. Michigan is 14-1, 9-1 of the Big Ten. So Michigan looking really dangerous. No real surprise at them being a number one seed. And then finally, we have number 16, Florida State, with a huge upset over number 7, UVA, last night. The Hoos held UNC to 48 and then allowed 81 to the Noles. So big, big lapse of defensive judgment right there. Kind of shocked that the defense fell apart that quickly, but really, really big win. Florida State led by 20 at halftime and basically kept pace with Virginia in the second half. Last note on here before we move on to TCU, Jalen Johnson, the former Duke freshman, has opted out of the team. Now, again, they're only 3 weeks before the tournament, so if I'm going to be totally honest, this was a quitting job. If you were only 3 weeks away from the ACC tournament, 4 weeks away from March Madness, in mid-February, and you leave the team, you are not opting out. And people said, oh, what about COVID? What about these things? You've had months on the team and playing against other teams and having all this stuff. No. I'm not buying that. This is a quitting job. I'm sorry. If you leave this late in the season, you're quitting on your team.
And you know what? It's pretty cold outside, and a lot of people are dealing with power and internet outages. So I'm actually going to opt out of the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, right now.
Nah, just no more.
I'm
time.
Just going to hang up and leave. I'm opting out.
So it's a good team player right there. Good Lord. Moving on to our TCU coverage. It's been an up and down week for the Horned Frogs, but to start off, we'll have our up moment. Now, we talked about how we just beat Oklahoma State. We had the Baylor game postponed. Then we came up against Iowa State, and I said, we have to win this game because Iowa State is god-awful. Now, the part that I also mentioned in here is that Iowa State have been playing really well against good opponents in the last few games. That carried over. Iowa State played a pretty competitive game against TCU, but the Frogs still found a way to win. 79-76, TCU gets a big, big, big win at home. And dear Lord, we needed to win this one. These teams were basically even on field goal percentage. TCU slightly better at three-point. Turnovers we only had by one, but the rebound game is why we won this. 51-34, TCU with 51 boards, which is very, very impressive. We are not typically the best rebounding team, but wow, were we very good on the boards in this game.
And when Kevin Samuel decides to control the boards, this team can win a lot of games, even without Mike Miles, which I attribute to why this game was so close in the first place, because he's really your shot creator, your scorer on the team. And RJ ended up taking over pretty well, driving to the bucket, drawing a lot of fouls. But I mean, just still inconsistent shooting from him across the board.
And Big Kev in this game, you mentioned, was playing really well. 10 points, 11 rebounds. RJ had 20 points, 7 assists, but was pretty inconsistent from the field. But that's RJ Nembhard for you. 11 for 13 from free throws. So he did what he was excellent from the free throw line. Taryn Frank also in this game. Oh, Taryn Frank, where did you come from? This kid was part of our 2020 recruiting class, along with Mike Miles and Eddie Lampkin. And Eddie, being a solid guy that doesn't really do a ton because he's been mostly on the bench, and we have Big Kev there anyway. Mike Miles, of course, being your breakout. So Taryn Frank was sort of the last guy that people were wondering about, and he was pretty dang good. Was only in the game for a few minutes, yet was 2 for 2 from deep starting, 8 points, 4 rebounds, and looked fantastic. I was loving the way this kid was playing. Again, he's still redshirting this season, so he'll only be playing in a couple games, if most. But really excited for him next season. Seeing Mike as a sophomore, him as a redshirt freshman, plus the fact that RJ will be coming back as a senior, Kevin may be coming back as a senior, though he really should be coming back. We basically get the whole team back in, plus all these guys in. I mean, next year's team could actually be legitimately very dangerous, especially with the way that Mike is playing, upgraded some, Taryn Frank in this lineup. This is a really solid team next season if they can get it together. But Taryn Frank was really, really big, easily my player of the game this evening. And other note on the bench too, O'Bannon and Ladie were very solid again. If those two players play a good game, we rarely lose. So yeah. Note on that. Those two bench guys are very essential to this team winning game, which we'll get to the next game after that to show why they're essential. But yeah, Chuck O'Bannon and Jaden Ladie were very solid. O'Bannon, great rebounder too. He's been getting a lot of boards, leaping in, getting aggressive. And that's the biggest thing with this game that I noticed that was different from the games in which we didn't play well, is that we got aggressive and we went out there and fought a lot. And that's the thing this team didn't do a lot over the break, at least when I seeing them lose, just being honest, they didn't look like there was a lot of fight in them. And they really fought a lot in this game. Note for Iowa State, to at least give them some credit here, Bolton was fantastic from the free throw line, shooting 13 for 13, which was kind of ridiculous. They still lost anyway. Iowa State, again, being not a very good team, but they did put up a great fight. So we'll give them credit here. They played much better than I think most anyone would have predicted. So big credit for this team. Next up, we get to the not as fun news here. PJ Fuller, I know I mentioned a lot about. We have railed on him a lot in this podcast, and he had 11 points tonight against Iowa State. But he sucked again.
5 for 16.
1 for 4. He's not good at basketball.
47 minutes, 5 for 16 from the floor.
He's not very good at basketball. And I just hate to say this because I've been waiting on it. We've been saying all season, when is he going to break out? When is he going to make a big impact? When is PJ Fuller having his coming out party? And I'm still wondering.
And he's your primary ball handler. He had 0 assists in this game. In fact, the team only had 6 assists in the whole game. The ball movement was sloppy and poor. And if you're not going to move the ball, you're not going to beat college defenses. That's just that's a fact of the matter.
Yeah. And RJ Nimhardt, no, I just railed on him for being inconsistent. And yep, 5 for 16, 3 for 6 from 3, 2 for 4 from the line. PJ did make his free throws, 2 for 6, 1 for 4. Mike Miles, though. Oh, Mike sold so hard. And all this was again at number 13, Texas. But oh, man, Mike Miles, 34 minutes played. 4 for 13, 0 for 5 from deep. Mikey, Mike, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and a block, 2 turnovers. Did not foul, though. That was the one thing. This team was pretty good in fouling in this game. The only real person that was anywhere near foul trouble was Ladie with 4, which Ladie was not good in this game either. And O'Bannon was starting, and he was 1 for 4, 1 for 2, no rebounds, 1 assist, no steal, no block, a turnover, and a foul.
Well, you look at it, and it's the contributions from not the bench, but the role players. It's the contribution from the guys who aren't shooting the ball as much, handling the ball quite as much. Because, I mean, you look at the top 5 players in terms of minutes for Texas. Andrew Jones with 27 minutes. Coleman played 35. And then Jericho Sims played 28. Everybody else played 30. And then they had a couple guys coming off the bench. One guy playing the 6-man role coming off with 27. They played a 9-man rotation too. And they were only 6 of those guys scored. But they got so much contribution from the guys who were primarily on the floor. Greg Brown with 13. Jericho Sims with 11. Coleman with 15. Andrew Jones leading the way with 19. And they get 5 points out of Ramey, but they get 5 assists out of him too. And so it's the contributions from those guys who are on the floor handling the ball. And we're just not getting those sorts of contributions from TCU's role players.
And the biggest thing you mentioned with assists in this game was a really annoying one to get through, because we only had 2 players get more than 1 assist, and each of them got 2. Like, that is an unbelievable statistic. Like, no one was passing the ball around. Team shot 36.5% from the field, and they allowed 49%. That's just not going to cut it. So, yeah, this game was not good. Another opportunity for us to get a statement win. And now TCU is 0-66 against top 15 teams on the road. So we're 0-3 this season. We continue our wonderful streak. TCU, of course, was supposed to be playing Texas Tech back and forth. I mean, it's been rescheduled a million times. What the official word is that TCU was supposed to go to Texas Tech today. Pretty obviously, that's not going to happen. That game was postponed. But TCU is still supposed to host Texas Tech on Thursday. Though, once again, looking at the weather, considering that there will be done snowing, I highly doubt anything is going to be cleared enough for them to come to the game. So I'm still not really believing that's going to happen. But either way, we'll see if that ends up coming true. I'm going to doubt it, to be totally honest, but we'll see if they still come here. Would love to have the game, of course, if it was able to be safely played, but we'll see if the weather will allow it. Updated bracketology. Gonzaga Baylor still staying strong, as well as Michigan, but Ohio State comes up into the top seeds. For the 2 seeds, Alabama will fall down. Illinois, Villanova, and Houston remain steady. 3 seeds will be Texas, Missouri moving up a spot, though they'll probably be crashing back down. Then Virginia and Texas Tech moving up one, and the four seeds, Iowa moving up, USC rocketing up from the sixth seed, Oklahoma, and then Tennessee. For the bubble watch, we're going to start this section going up on here of some teams that are going to be looking around the league and see who is sort of in, who is sort of out, and what our look is going to be. For the teams that you can safely say, no matter what happens, they're locks: Virginia, Baylor, Villanova, Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, Bama, Houston, and Gonzaga. I think that's a pretty safe list. For the next up, these are teams that should be in. I would say a good chunk of these are locks, but we can debate a couple of them. Florida State, Virginia Tech, Louisville, Clemson, Texas, Texas Tech, OU, West Virginia, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Creighton, Xavier, Iowa, Wisconsin, Purdue, Rutgers, USC, UCLA, Colorado, Missouri, UT, as in Tennessee, Florida, and then finally BYU. I'm not totally sold on Kansas being in this category, being honest. I don't know if Kansas should be in this category.
I think Kansas should be in the category based on the fact that they're going to make the tournament, and they should be in. I think they deserve that distinction.
At least looking at the teams with work to do, I think there's some teams in the work to do that have about the same odds as they do. Like, I get they're going to make the tournament. I know, but it's just because their name is Kansas. But I think if you really look at what they've done over the season, they really haven't been impressive at all.
I agree with that to a certain extent, but they're going to make the tournament, and I think they've done enough to deserve to be in the tournament.
Yeah. I know they're still going to make it. Their work-to-do teams are still probably going to get in. Work-to-do, some of the teams here: North Carolina, UConn, Seton Hall, St. Joseph, Minnesota, IU, Maryland, Penn State, Oregon, Stanford, and then Arkansas, LSU, SMU, Drake, Boise State, San Diego State, Loyola, St. Bonaventure, I think that was Colorado State, VCU, Richmond, St. Louis, Utah State, and Western Kentucky. Also, Utah State kind of going on a tear right now.
They Arkansas and Minnesota should both be in.
I think that's true now, especially with their wins they've gotten recently. Those two teams should be in as well. Also, it is kind of amazing to me that Kansas is 15-7 and they're second in the Big 12. Kind of crazy. They're tied with Oklahoma at second, but pretty wild. They're only there. They do have the most amount of losses in the Big 12 for as high as they are, all the way down to TCU, only one behind them. But still is kind of crazy that TCU is only 5.5 games back and we're in eighth place. K-State and Iowa State are 10 games back. So we can now say officially that Kansas State and Iowa State are eliminated from getting the Big 12 regular season title, which I know is crazy news, but they are officially out. And I think with 5.5 games back, that TCU and Oklahoma State are also officially out. West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Texas, not quite done yet, though. We'd have to see some pretty massive upsets. Baylor is pretty much going to win it. And finally, we get to our team of the week. I'm going to go with USC here. They went up from a 6 seed to a 3 seed. Evan Mobley, I still might think, is the best freshman in the country. Destroyed a ranked UCLA team and got them very quickly out of here. But yeah, I think I can make the argument that Evan Mobley is playing better than Cade Cunningham right now and leading this USC team to a very impressive record.
And my team of the week is Creighton for that big win that they got at Villanova. It's been hard to knock off Villanova this week. Not quite as strong of a Big East conference, but Creighton looks like they could certainly make some noise in the tournament. Specifically the Big East tournament. Would not be surprised at all if that was the matchup in the Big East finals there in Madison Square Garden. But my team of the week, Creighton, for that big upset.
And so that is going to do it for this episode of the Blanket Coverage Podcast, episode 246. We're getting pretty close to our 100th episode. I'm not entirely sure what number this is, but I will make sure to look that up and get it down for the next one. But we are getting very close to that moment, which is going to be pretty exciting for us, considering we've been doing this since October of, 2019. So it's been quite a long minute for us. But anything else you would like to add before we let each other go here?
Not at all. Thank you so much for listening to the Blanket Coverage Podcast. As always, we really do appreciate it. And from snowy Fort Worth, Texas, I am Noah Parker.
And I'm Jack Wallace.
Peace out, y'all.